Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks very much for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. Defense health is our topic this week, and in particular, the business side of that almost $50 billion enterprise. The Defense Health Agency first opened its doors in October of 2013 as a way to integrate some of the management functions of the military health system via a series of shared services. DHA is slated to reach its full operational capability later this year. We're going to talk today about some of those shared services and how DHA has started to integrate the healthcare business processes of the three military departments with Joseph Marshall, the director of the Business Support Directorate at DHA. He joined the new agency in September of last year after having served as the top financial official for the Navy's medical program. Mr. Marshall and I spoke at DHA's new headquarters in Falls Church, Virginia, starting with a short overview of what DHA is and how it came to be.
The military health system, you know, has been around for a while. Going back into the 1990s, the services had issues around, you know, keeping the health accounts adequately funded because of all the readiness demands. So frankly, the department said, okay, let's stand up a defense health program. So they pulled all the medical monies into one place. So then that led into how do we manage that money? How do we manage those efforts? So I would take a longer view to say that the TRICARE management activity was the first generation of that. And so it was largely a stovepiped effort, if you look. Looking back at it, the services had their lanes for clinical care, and then here in health affairs, they were primarily focused on policy, certainly overall, but really focused on how do you execute the major healthcare contracts that we do on the network. Starting in 2010, 2011, another effort to study this process, what's the most effective organizational relationships. One of the things that came out of that is, hey, there's real opportunity here in something called shared services, things that the services all have to do for themselves, just as a course of daily business. And aren't there ways to do that collectively and serve all the players and perhaps be a little more effective, a little more efficient in doing it? And so this led to the establishment of the Defense Health Agency, which is where I work. So the Defense Health Agency has about 10 shared services we're working on today. And some of them are mature, some of them are less mature, but all of them are the right idea in that if we pull these things together and build one service unit, if you will, that can support and sustain the efforts of the service medical activities, then we can do that more effectively. And we have evidence of that in several areas that we can talk about.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of them. We probably won't get into detail on all 10 of them in the course of our interview, but of those that are the most mature, what would you point to and what would you say are the largest success stories in, and again, a relatively young organization, where have you made the most progress?
Yeah. So I think facilities is one of those areas and is one of the areas in the Business Support Directorate. So in the area of facilities, we've known for some time that it's a challenge. Like much of DoD, we have some aging infrastructure. In the case of hospitals and care settings, we are particularly attuned to keeping that high quality, high standard. Nobody likes to go to an old hospital or an old building to get medical care. So we really had a lot of allegiance, if you will, from the services to figure out how do we do this facility thing better so that it works well for all of us. So we got a little bit of a running start at how do we plan the military construction account, for example. How do we decide what are the highest priority things that we should be building? And so we got a running start in that we were able to develop a process, and we're now in the fourth cycle of using this process of figuring out how do we pull out pretty objective criteria, let teams figure out how our body of projects match those criteria, how do they rate and rank, and then we are able to put that into a model, assemble it, and then take it up through various levels of leadership for review so that we can figure out what are the highest priority things here based upon the readiness mission, based upon the military necessity mission, based upon the training mission, based upon many, many factors involved in facilities. So No model is ever perfect, but we believe that facilities model is getting better and better for us, that we are better able to support the services. And the feedback we get from the services is that they believe they are being supported, and they appreciate the crispness of the conversation around facilities, because they are better able then to localize on the issues, pull the issues out, discuss them, and get leadership resolution on them.
So facilities is probably a really good example to talk about. You know, what are the areas that are ripe for jointness, and what are the areas that the services still need to handle on their own? Because, of course, each one of the military departments has their own installation and environment people in their secretariats. So what is left up to the services in the case of facilities? What is left up to the services? What are the opportunities for joint and shared?
Well, and so we had a lot of discussion with the services around this very point. Because initially there were some who thought, well, okay, so you have military construction, but you also have large facility projects. Again, as activities are older, the ability to build new is frequently not there, given resource limitations. So we need to modernize the structures that we have. So where do you draw the line in terms of what DHA is going to do as opposed to what the services are going to do? So in this generation, if you will, of the DHA and facilities, we've chosen to draw the line at the military construction. There's certainly a lot of large facility projects that go on under the services aegis, and we are attempting to help support the services in that. Again, I think that's an area where going forward we can figure out how we can better support the services. But these large facility projects at this point remain under the services aegis.
Okay, so facilities, one example. What else would you point to in terms of progress among these 10 shared services so far?
Logistics would be another one as an area where, again, the supplies and equipment that we routinely use across our hospitals. I think many times we take this for granted, the fact that the supplies and equipment will be there. And the fact is you've got to have a pretty sophisticated network to support the provider to have the right bore needle. You know, I talked to a provider, not anyone who works for DOD, but I talked to a provider the other day out in town who was just sharing with me the frustration that in the office where she works, they only had one bore of needle, and it was appropriate for an adult, not for an infant. And so those kinds of quality issues around care, having the right tool for the right patient, for the right job, very important for us. So at the same time, while you want to have the right tool for the right patient, there are many opportunities for us to standardize and therefore be able to improve our buys and be able to improve the cost, the expense of buying those supplies. So again, this is another area where there's been a lot of great work going back for probably 10 years or more. But we've been able to capitalize that on that in the Defense Health Agency, pulling the services closer together and getting better cooperation, better integration on the buys, getting better feedback across the enterprise to the MTFs in terms of how well they are participating in these joint buy kinds of programs. And so we're very pleased with this, and the feedback we get from the services is that they're very pleased. So I think this is another strong element where we're having the effect of driving down cost and improving the service across the enterprise.
So when you standardize and share something like logistics, how much do you start to get into, you know, if you're using one kind of needle that's procured for all three military departments, how much of that actually translates into changing business processes within facilities versus doing something as simple as buying one brand of needle versus another?
Yes, so this is where the clinical leadership is very important to us. So one of the things we do in the military health system and the Defense Health Agency is we stay very close to our clinical leadership, because we don't want to be making business decisions that make sense to us but then wind up not making clinical sense. So for example, in standardizing the type of tools that we use, that obviously has a training tail or impact. If you're a surgeon and you train on a certain type of surgical tools, set of tools, then when you arrive at your hospital for your duty assignment, you're expecting to find those types of tools available. If you find that they're not available and there's other tools that are available with which you're not familiar, that poses obviously challenges to you being able to do the job that you are intended to do. So we want to have all of these things walk and talk together. We want the things that you're trained on to be the things that are available in the hospital when you arrive for duty or service as a civilian. So you don't get there overnight. But we've had very good dialogue, improved dialogue here in the time of the Defense Health Agency in getting feedback from clinicians, in gathering up that input and figuring out how do we factor that into the buying so that we begin from a place where we buy a lot of things. How do we begin to neck down that list over time so that we can get better and better purchasing power?
That's Joseph Marshall, the Director for Business Support at the Defense Health Agency. We'll come back and talk more about the stand-up of that new agency and how it's providing shared services to the three military medical commands after our first break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Talking this week about DoD's newest combat support agency, the Defense Health Agency, and its business operations in particular. Our guest this week is Joseph Marshall, the head of the Business Support Directorate at DHA. Before the break, he gave us a breakdown of two of the shared services he's responsible for providing to the military medical community, logistics and facilities, and how they're starting to achieve cost savings within the Defense Health Program.
So maybe we can come back and talk some more about some of the individual shared services as time allows. But can you talk us through, as DHA was being created, how you selected which services were ripe candidates for sharing? How did you rack and stack that initial 10?
Okay, so so I was not here when the DHA stood up. I was actually working in one of the services. But I can tell you that the much of the discussion was around the art of the possible. You know, where do we begin? And there were areas where we were close. So facilities was an area. Logistics was an area. Pharmacy was another area where, frankly, again, not my specific area, but an area where there was a lot of discussion around how do we centralize and do that cooperatively among ourselves. And so I think going forward, there are many more areas in which we can work, but that's the subject of a conversation with the services over time, because again, we are here to support the services and figure out how to support the military hospitals getting their mission done. And so it's not just us deciding what we would like to do.
So in other words, that list of 10 is not fixed in stone for all time.
But it's where we start, and it's an important place to focus for now.
So let's talk a little bit more about your organization, the Business Support Directorate. What do you do and what's your mission within the organization?
Yeah, so care always, when you go to the doctor, you want to know that you're going to be seen by a doctor and you're going to get the care that you need or the procedure that you need. You don't think about the business processes behind that or the billing and collecting. You just assume that that's all going to work. So that I view as the mission of the Business Support Directorate is figuring out how in the military medicine sphere we make business work as seamlessly as possible while ensuring that we get the maximum readiness for the department and that we provide the goods and services that are needed to get the mission done at the best possible price, the best possible cost. So again, it cuts across a wide array of areas. So part of that is facilities. Part of it is logistics, but it also goes off into, you know, the resource distribution process, you know, budget planning and budget execution. We also do fraud investigations because, again, fraud around military health processes has been a longstanding concern in DoD. So we have a standing group that looks carefully at that and pursues it with vigor. We also have very careful contract management of our contract health care. And we also have a headquarters controller function that has a pretty robust job here to manage our headquarters responsibilities for the Defense Health Agency. And then we have a cell that works on audit, financial audit being a major goal for DoD. And so that's no mean feat and takes a lot of detailed work. So that group is working on how do we improve our stewardship over resources and our reporting over resources and how do we do well on those audits.
to stick with audit, I mean, the military services writ large are all in very different places on their path toward full audit readiness. How true is that within the medical organizations? Are their accounting systems sort of separate and apart from the military services that they are a part of? Are they further along toward auditability than sort of their parent military departments? What's sort of the progress so far?
Yeah, so my experience in audit is that it's a journey for every organization. And given that we have a variety of systems and support systems, it's always, if you will, a complicated answer. And so the question is reasonably simple, right? Where did the money come from and where did the money go? And prove it to me. Show me the documentation that establishes that what you're telling me is correct. So that said, we have a lot of systems in the Department of Defense that are not seamless. They are not as heel to toe, if you will, in their documentation or their ability to reflect financial transactions as anybody in the department would like or want. So that brings on the need for manual processes around them to drive down risk and ensure that resources are handled properly. So having that together as a story. Again, audit is very much about transactions, transaction excellence, transaction detail, documentation, internal control. So it's not so much a focus on systems as it is around the things that I just said. Mm-hmm. So the ability to do those things and do it well is something that you have to work on over time. And as you accomplish it over time and you do more, then you have more of a body of work for the auditors to look at. So I think we have some of our components are very strong. They have been working on this for a while. I think we have other places across the Defense Health Program that still need work. Again, this is true across the Department of Defense, where we have strengths as well as places that still need work. So my assessment is, we're on the journey. There's still plenty to do. Again, if you look at the Marine Corps, it's taken the Marine Corps several years since they were the first in DOD to work on financial audit. I think our experience, hopefully will be shorter, but probably similar in that it will take us several iterations to get to a place where we have good results.
And yet I think you have at least one large clean opinion so far. In purchased care, right?
We do. We have, again, when you look at the at the Defense Health Program, we have many different pieces. So the contract health care piece, which is more than $20 billion and is managed out of Aurora, has a clean opinion, has had a clean opinion for over 5 years now. And so that represents a very terrific achievement on the part of the department. At the same time, that opinion is but one piece of the larger whole. So paying the contracts, invoices, and being able to demonstrate great fidelity over those reports associated with that very large amount of money is a major achievement. When you come to the military hospitals, that is a more complex environment that involves payroll, reimbursable work orders, contracts and contract payments, and buying supplies and equipment. And so that's a more challenging environment to have the kinds of documentation and internal control that I talked to a few moments ago. So again, I think we have different challenges in different spheres. Again, this is not a new story in the Department of Defense. And you've got to work on it all because you want the audit is over the Defense Health Program as an entity eventually over the whole thing.
But does the standardization and the sharing that you're doing right now make it easier to eventually get that clean opinion on the Defense Health Program?
I believe it does. I believe it does. I think it's important that we can drive out variation as much as possible, because then that can streamline our efforts and make our use of resources, both manpower and money, more efficient.
That's Joe Marshall, the Director for Business Support at the Defense Health Agency. One more break here. We'll come back and talk more about streamlining the military medical system's business functions in just a moment. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Thanks for listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Servin. Talking this week about the Defense Health Agency, set up to be the shared services provider for the three military branches that make up the military health system. Our guest this week is Joseph Marshall, the director of the Business Support Directorate at DHA. He's responsible for several of those shared services and directly oversees four divisions within the new agency: facility planning, budget and resource management, program integrity, and medical logistics.
Looping back to a topic we covered earlier, logistics, as I understand it, one of the big enablers there is something called the Defense Medical Logistics System. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and what it does for you?
Yeah, so we're really fortunate in the military health system to have a tool like DMLS, as we call it.
Of course, there's an acronym.
So it's a very powerful tool that allows our logisticians to basically sit, you know, at a terminal or a screen and move between various purchasing venues to accomplish, you know, different tasks. So if we can't find the tool that we're looking for or the product that we're looking for in one area, we can look in other areas and then figure out what the best method is for achieving the delivery dates and urgency that we have. So it's fortunate for us because in other parts of the Department of Defense, again, without systems being as integrated, you have to move around among various offices to accomplish what I just said that we can do at one system. So it's a powerful tool, and it also provides us the opportunity to do other things like monitor maintenance of our equipment so that we can stay abreast of keeping the equipment up to date and controlling where the equipment is. So that's a great tool, and we use it to good advantage. And I know other parts of the government, like the VA, have looked at it to analyze it for their uses. I can't speak to how, you know, what the results of that. I just know that they have been interested in looking.
To get a better handle on how something like that actually operates, so to just take the example of monitoring the maintenance of equipment, you're actually tracking equipment down to the MTF level within each one of the services?
Well, and down to the item level, because again, an item may require calibration or other maintenance. So this permits us to have a ready record of where that equipment is and what needs to be done to it so that we have technicians that can do it, or we can call in contract technicians who can do that work.
And just in the fixed MTF facilities here in CONUS, or are you also able to track what's going out in deployed environments?
Yeah, it's a worldwide tool, so we have it across the, well, it's not in the operating forces per se, but it is in the military hospital systems. I will tell you that, again, one of the features here in the Defense Health Agency, again, we want to improve military readiness. That's why military medical exists, is to help on the military readiness concerns. But one of the features that we have been able to emphasize, refine, and push on is ordering and using supplies in our MTFs, and then ensuring that we do that function the same way as we migrate over into the operating forces, so that as you deploy a force, a military force with a medical component, that the folks who are ordering the medical supplies are doing that function the same way in the operating sphere as they were in the hospital. Okay, so it's a train like you fight, or fight like you train, kind of scenario. So again, this is I think something that the military always struggles with, to ensure that they aren't trying to change or create a new process in a complex, potentially combat-like environment. And so this is a place where military medicine has a good story to tell, and it's been successful, as we've seen in recent conflicts.
And so, I mean, the natural extension of that, obviously, is you're not just standardizing between deployed and non-deployed, you're standardizing between the services as well.
Yes, to the extent possible is how I'll characterize that. I don't want to create the idea that everything is exactly the same. There are some differences between the service cultures, and again, we celebrate those differences because it makes us who we are as the American military. But at the same time, it allows the fundamental processes to be very similar, if not the same.
I mean, that brings up an interesting broader point. How much business process reengineering are you trying to do between the services to get them all on the same page in a general sense? And how does that transformation work to the extent it does? How collaborative is it between the Surgeons General? How directed is it from the top of the DHA leadership?
So this is, I think, an area of a potential area for a lot of future work. I think in terms of business process engineering, I think there's some considerable appetite to do that kind of work. I think as we undertake that, we have to always be conscious of the fact that what is it Deming says is that every system is perfectly designed to produce the outputs it produces today. So when you look at the military services, Army, Navy, Air Force, and again, full disclosure, I was Navy and you know, I had command of a ship. So when you look at the services, they have been very careful to construct, you know, processes that serve their unique readiness needs. And so they're not just creating stuff to create stuff or creating stuff to be different. They're creating stuff that actually fills a gap, answers a requirement, and makes them more of a military-ready organization. So as we think about, okay, how can we change business processes or how could we align business processes, you know, we have to look at it through the lens of, well, here's something that that the Air Force does, and here's something that the Navy does, and here's something that the Army does, that all would kind of look on the surface to be similar, but when you peel back the layers, they may be meeting fundamentally different needs. And so you have to ensure that when you do business process reengineering here, that you're driving down to the appropriate levels and understanding the true readiness issues that underlie those processes. So I would agree with you, Jared, completely on the notion that this is an area where some good work can be done. But you've got to make sure that you're addressing the readiness concerns that underlay all of these processes.
And is there a forum today where the leadership of the services in the medical arena can get together and kind of have those conversations about where it makes sense to standardize and where they need to preserve their own uniqueness?
Yeah, so I think there is. I believe in the current era, if you will, since the stand-up of the DHA and the advent of a lot more military medical governance processes and bodies, we have several bodies where these kinds of conversations are being had today or being looked at today. And so it sets the template for some very productive work in the future.
Again, since the stand-up of DHA, or maybe even going back past that, I mean, I think one of the whole reasons for the existence of the agency is to help cut costs and share services where it makes sense. Any big cost-saving success stories that you would point to? I think we were talking about pharmacy off the air a little bit.
Yeah, so pharmacy is one of those places where, again, we've had a very robust pharmacy shelf life extension program. So obviously, if you're a medical organization, you use quite a bit of pharmaceutical supplies. And pharmaceutical supplies all typically come with an expiration date. And so when you handle pharmaceuticals in volume, keeping up with those expiration dates and making sure that you are not using expired medicines is pretty key. At the same time, there's a caveat in there that says, "Hey, those shelf life that shelf life component is not static." The FDA is reviewing that and is extending those lives, and so actually, you have a great opportunity if you're vigilant to police that that shelf life extension and get more bang out of the things you've already bought. And so in our case, we've had a very good process of doing that and been able to save over $4 billion in shelf life extension work. And we'd also provide that as a service, I know, to some other activities across the government, prison systems and others.
Joseph Marshall is our guest this week. He's the Director for Business Support at the Defense Health Agency. He'll join us for one more segment when we come back from our final break. And we'll also hear a few words from the agency's director, Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, on what DHA's all about. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Back on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. One more segment with Joseph Marshall from the Defense Health Agency. He's the director for DHA's Business Support Directorate, in charge of several of the shared services DHA provides to the military medical commands, including facility planning, financial management, program integrity, and logistics.
And Mr. Marshall, as we wrap up our last final minutes in the hour here, as we've been discussing all hour, a very young agency, and yet you've managed to make some inroads on these shared services already. As you go forward toward full operating capability later this year and beyond, just wanted to give you a chance to talk about what your biggest few priorities are for DHA.
As we talked a few minutes ago, I think, you know, care in the foreground and being the most important thing for the patient, for the warrior, for his family. But then having business operate ever more seamlessly and coherently in the background. So one of the big major projects we have going on in the military health system is another generation of electronic health record. So I think that will open up opportunities for us to relook our support systems and rethink our support systems and how well they perform those kind of secondary and tertiary functions, which enable us to do billing and collecting or ordering or contracting in a more effective way. Something we haven't touched on very much here is one of the streamlined efforts we have going on is in the billing and collecting area. And so we believe we're positioning the enterprise well to do billing and collecting in a far stronger way going forward than it has been in the past. We have historically had pretty much service-specific efforts focused on billing and collecting. Now we're going to have an enterprise system that will assist the services in going out and collecting from insurance companies, from the patients that we see, the monies that that they are entitled to receive for the care that they provide. You know, this isn't just a good idea. This is actually a requirement under the law. Congress says, hey, medical care is expensive, and if you as a patient at a military hospital have insurance, then we want the military system to bill and collect to the extent that it is allowed for the services that they provide. So going forward, I think we're going to have more robust capability there, and we should be able to improve our collections from the insurance side of the house. I think as we look to other systems with the advent of the next generation electronic health record, we can think about, it's hard to envision exactly all of the capability that you will get in a new system. So we spend some time thinking about this and looking at it. I believe as the procurement decisions are made on the health record and it rolls out, then we'll be better able to figure out what support systems continue to work, what support systems may need revision or heading off in a different direction that then will enable us to have a more automatic function in terms of the tools that we use, in terms of how readily accessible we have electronic information on the use of those tools, and so we can better judge reorder and resupply of those tools. We see elements of this in civilian hospitals now, where there's more and more automatic, if you will, resupply. And so I think we will progress pretty rapidly down those paths as we modernize over the next decade or so. I think in general, our business processes are going to continue to evolve. We touched a little bit on business process reengineering. That's an area where I think, frankly, we have opportunities to relook how we do, how we perform services like reading films, like doing laboratory services. Again, those are areas where, again, we've got to approach the conversation carefully to ensure we keep meeting the readiness needs of the services. But I think those are areas that pretty readily could be looked at for business process improvements.
You mentioned looking at civilian hospitals in the context of automatic resupply and EHR. More broadly, as part of your job, how much of that does DHA do in terms of looking out to the private sector to try to identify what is the art of the possible and sort of best practices?
Yeah, so we do some of that. Again, there has been a history of more of that activity than I've seen in the short time that I've been here. But there are visits out to the commercial hospitals. There's a fair number of forums that we attend or are invited to discuss that kind of process. So again, we're always looking for a better tool, a better process that we can adapt. Again, it doesn't always necessarily translate directly from civilian hospitals, but we have quite a conversation going on.
Mr. Marshall, it's been an interesting hour. Thanks again for helping us get a little more acquainted with DHA. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared.
Joseph Marshall is the director of the Defense Health Agency's Business Support Directorate. He talked with us at the agency's headquarters in Falls Church, Virginia. A few minutes left in the hour before we go this week, and I thought we'd use it to hear a few words from DHA's director for a bigger picture view of what DHA is and what its leadership envisions it doing for the military health system. So we're going to play a very short excerpt from a recent presentation by Lieutenant General Douglas Robb. He spoke at AFSEA Northern Virginia's recent Army IT Day about the agency's overall mission and objectives.
Defense Health Agency is to medical and will be to medical as, say, the Defense Logistics Agency is to the four world or the logistics world, or DISA, what they are to the six or the comm world. So you can see it makes sense for what we call the shared service concept for the healthcare governance and the healthcare to set up a paradigm or organizational construct that delivers much like those two combat support agencies. We are a combat support agency. And that was key when we stood this up. So we are accountable and we are responsible to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staffs to deliver. And so if the services don't like what we're doing, they call the chairman up and he goes and puts his finger in my chest. And he just bypasses the SecDef and he bypasses the Undersecretary for Health, Dr. Woodson, and goes VFR direct to me. Okay? That's what a combat support agency is all about. Next slide. We are globally spread out, and again, we have, and a lot of this has to do with TRICARE, but basically we cover the globe in support, just like DISA does and just like DLA does. Much like DLA, they took commodities. So let's pick fuel. You know, about 50% of their business is fuel. So when they stood up DLA, Army, Navy, and Air Force were all running three separate fuel contracts. Hell, they weren't even running standardized fuel contracts within their own services. So now you can imagine your purchasing power if you combine those and your ability to spread from a commodities perspective around the globe. Pharmacy is to fuel, okay? You know, big chunk of our change is our ability to consolidate, the ability to purchase pharmaceuticals, much like you do fuel. But here are the other domains where there was opportunity that we saw where a joint first solution, where you could get rid of redundancy, okay? Do use standardization so that you basically increase efficiency, effectiveness, more importantly, quality of care, and at the end of the day, ought to be able to save some money. But this is the only domain you care about right now today is HIT. And that's a large domain of ours, okay? And it was also one of our shared services where the service is elected to push what we call all in. This infrastructure piece is huge. And so we have to think about what we're gonna do, okay, to ensure that we're gonna get the best performance out of that new electronic health record, okay? And I'm using this as an example because it's much like the highway system, okay? The MHS, the military health system, is not responsible for the highways that high-performance vehicle is going to run on. We are only responsible for what we call the inside the medical treatment facility, okay? So we basically have the local or what I call the city roads, all right? So we're also going to count on, you have a federal highway system, all right? That's going to be DISA. So they're going to have to pave some of their roads too, all right, to accommodate this new high-performance vehicle. And then now, let's talk Army in here, okay? All right, so the federal guys are going to get you to the front gate, okay? Now we got to get from the front gate of a Lewis, okay, a Hood, a Huachuca, okay? Got to get them to the front door of the military treatment facility, okay? So it's going to take a lot of folks, like our highway system, okay, to make sure, like when you get home from vacation, you know, to get you home safely, securely, and as quick as possible. Okay, we're saving lives like we've never saved before, okay? We're putting more capable, more mission-ready, more medically ready soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines in a conflict than we've ever done before. But what's just as important at the end of the day, is when they return home, okay? All right, and again, if they've sacrificed, okay, it is important for us to ensure that they have a quality of life. A quality of life, to me, is almost, okay, as important as a quantity of life, okay? And again, it's important that this electronic health record, and going back to all the HIT support, at the end of the day, drives what we call highly effective, highly efficient, and an increase in the quality and the delivery of care, okay? And at the same time, if able, okay, we want to save a few dollars, which is a lot of the efforts that we're doing with our shared service.
Again, that's Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, the director of the Defense Health Agency. Just a short excerpt there from a recent presentation at AFCEA's Army IT Day on his vision for the new agency. Our guest for most of this hour was Joseph Marshall, the director of DHA's Business Support Directorate. If you missed any of that conversation, we will post today's full program, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'm Jared Serbin. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.